There are many aspects to the subject of success. For myself, I have to say that yes, I've done lots of things. I've written books and music and so on and so on. To me, that's not success. If what I feel in my heart has been able to reach a few people, that to me is success. If the bliss that I feel in my heart, God is able to share with other people, that is my success. You all are my success. I feel that is the most important thing. But there are many aspects to the subject of success. One is doing what we set out to do. Not many people are in the position I'm fortunately in of being able to look back and say, yes, I've pretty well done everything I planned to do. That's not a usual accomplishment. But there is also such a thing as success in failure. There's success in being able to go through difficult periods in one's life. And I'm going to sit down. I'll find it easier. Getting to be an old man. Being able to go through something that everybody in this world, I imagine, goes through in his lifetime. We all have periods in our lives when nothing goes right, when everything goes wrong. There are two things that we can do that can help us through those disastrous periods. One is learn how to face them. The other is overcome them. We can do both. We are not bound by karma to the extent that most people who proclaim the law of karma insist. It may be your karma to lose a leg, but if your attitude is right, that karma will come, but it'll only scratch your leg. You don't have to be a slave to your bad karma, your fate, or whatever you may want to call it. You can stride supreme over your little landscape and be above everything. I know there's a woman in India who is she's an astrologer. And every time she mentions me, she says, my God, I don't know how you can stand that horoscope. And yet I look back over my life, and I have to say, it's been an easy life. I've had a few little tests along the way, but what's a test? It just doesn't matter. When things go wrong, you don't have to call them wrong. And that's the first thing that I want to talk about. There are two things we must understand. One is how to overcome. The other is how to accept. And we need to learn both. I don't want to make anybody passive. I don't want to say that, well, because the world treats you badly, therefore, just get a hangdog expression and wait to be kicked again. You don't have to do that, but you don't have to fight back either. If people kick you, you can accept that as a blessing. And that is something more difficult to do. There was a story of a Swami in India who came back to his ashram after a day's outing, walking around the countryside, and his back was bleeding. And he said, oh, we had such fun today. The children were throwing stones. And he didn't even take into account the fact that it was at him that they were throwing stones. You don't have to feel that it's all that bad just because it happens to you. Remember, things are happening to people all over the world. You don't have to become so identified with your body that you say that what is happening happens to me. It happens. Let it be that way. I remember when I was in a court trial and somebody was doing his best and he had sworn to destroy me. And my feeling was that he can take away everything, but he can never take away the only thing that is the only treasure I have, which is my love for God. You don't have to be touched by the way people treat you. You can rather take it as a blessing. I remember one time I was in a big conference back east, and a lot of people were supposed to be speaking. I was one of them. And it was about communities. And I was the only person there who had actually started a community and made a success of it. And afterwards, during the time, I invited a group of these teachers to dinner in a restaurant. And I was the host, and I was paying the bill. And it was quite a surprise to me to find that they were totally ignoring me and asking each other, when is your book coming out? When is this the winter? Oh, mine's coming out in November. Oh, mine will be out in December, and so on. And I just thought that was absolutely marvelous. It just didn't matter. What is so important about being important? Let people scorn you if they like. It's their problem. It's not yours. So the first thing we need to learn is not to base our self-worth on other people's opinions. Let's face it, they're usually wrong anyway. But if they're right, then let's be grateful for the fact, because that means we've got something to work on. When you find that you've got a fault, instead of feeling down about it, think, good, I've got something to grapple with now. We know that something is keeping us from the happiness that we're looking for. And when you find what that thing may be, or at least one thing that may be causing that lack of sufficient fulfillment and happiness in yourself, then be grateful. Everybody's got something wrong with him, or he wouldn't be on this planet, let's face it. So don't worry about your faults. Think what you can do about them. Don't worry about the negative side of your life and the obstacles and so on. There are things to overcome. Actually, the best people in the world are the people who have the most to overcome, because you have to put out energy to overcome them, to transcend them. The energy that you put out is the real source of your success. There is success that comes to you on a platter. It is the success that comes from good karma. But if you just sort of feed off of that, you're not getting anywhere. It's sort of like a saint who one time was, this is a story in ancient India, that an angel came to him and said that you've done such good things in this world that I have been sent to take you to heaven in your physical body. That's a way of saying leaving your body without losing consciousness. And the saint said, well, this is very nice of you and I appreciate it, but tell me, what are the pluses of going to heaven? And he said, well, you get to mix with the deities, with the gods, with the angels. You get to have a life of great bliss and happiness and fulfillment. And he went on this way for a while, and the saint said, well, what my experience of life teaches me is that for every advantage, there's going to be some disadvantage. What are the disadvantages to going to heaven? And the angel said, well, this is a very peculiar question you're asking me, but since you're asking it, I guess I have to answer that there does come a time when your good karma of being in heaven, be it 100 years, be it 1,000 years, be it just a few years, it will be exhausted, and you will have to come back to this world to continue working out your past karma. And when that comes, it's sort of like the autumn when the leaves begin to fall. Your happiness will fall like those leaves, and bit by bit you will feel sad to have to go back. And while you're in heaven, you won't be able to advance further, because it's so beautiful you don't have the incentive to advance further. And the saint said, well, thank you very much, but the difficulties you've outlined are so colossal, I can't imagine anybody in his right mind wanting to go there. He said, can't you offer me something better? And the angel said, well, there is a level of consciousness where you are beyond light and shadow, beyond limitation of all kinds, and it's beyond our realm, so we only can speak about it from hearsay. But to get there, you have to stay in a physical body and work hard. So the saint said, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your coming and taking the trouble. But frankly, anybody in his right mind would have to say, I'd much rather stay here and meditate and work out my karmas. And this is the fact of our so-called difficulties. People feel so bowed down by their difficulties, they should be grateful for them. Because every hardship you endure makes you stronger and helps to get rid of some of that burden. We all know there's something on our minds that we can't somehow get it off our minds to come into perfect bliss. We all know that we want happiness, but we don't find it. And so we keep coming back, working it out bit by bit. It takes a long time to find liberation from this world, mainly because we think it takes a long time. Mind you, it does not have to take a long time. You can say, I'm free right now, and you need to be free if you say it with enough energy. I remember there was some quality in myself that I really wanted to overcome, but it was so heavy on me that I didn't know how to do it. Finally, one day, I remember I was in deep meditation, and I said, I'm absolutely sick of this. Get out of my mind. And I said it with so much power that never again did it come to me. And I remember leaving my meditation that day and seeing Yogananda, my guru, standing at Mount Washington looking down over the city. And I went to him for his blessing, and he tapped me on the forehead and he said, very good. So he knew what I'd been going through. You can get rid of your problems. There was one man who had a problem with drinking. And every time he'd give it up, he'd go back to it. And he still kept his cupboard with alcoholic beverages of one kind and another. And one time, he started to open up a bottle of whiskey when he said, I'm so fed up with this thing. And he took all those bottles and hurled them on the sidewalk, broke every bottle. And the violence of that emotion was so great that he quit completely. But if you put enough energy, it's only energy that you've put out in the past that makes for that karma, makes for that blockage. If you put out enough energy, you can get rid of these things. And when I speak of success, I'm speaking not of that kind of success that is handed to you on a platter. I'm speaking of that kind of success that you attain by sheer hard work. Now, there are certain attitudes that can help you to achieve that success. The first is acceptance. When things go wrong, learn how to accept them. When people turn against you, instead of railing and ranting because they aren't treating you nicely, accept it. They're not all going to treat you well. You'll be surprised how that simple practice of acceptance of whatever is will make you live a life of peace and harmony. I can speak from quite a lot of experience because, yes, that woman astrologer in Germany was right. I have a grand cross, astrologically, with all the big planets and the fixed signs. And it's supposed to be a hard life, and I guess some people looking at my life would say, yes, it has been a hard life. I have not defined it as that. I simply choose not to define it as that. I choose to say this is my good fortune. It gives me a chance to grow. It gives me a chance to go strong. It gives me a chance to learn certain attitudes. For example, when people have turned against me who were dear friends, I've decided that whether I love them or not does not depend on whether they love me or not. It depends on my attitude. When am I happier, loving or not loving? Obviously, I'm happier when I love. Therefore, I choose to give them love. It's driven them up the wall. If you want a good revenge, this will do it for you. But don't do it with that motive. The fact is that nobody needs to tell you how you should be or who you are. You are yourself. I have had this good fortune in my life of never having my opinion of other people dependent on their good opinion or bad opinion of me. Some people have disliked me, and I still like them, because I think they're fine people. Some people love me, and it means nothing to me, because I don't feel that their love is of a deep kind. Real happiness is what we're looking for when we think of success. Many people, it's sort of like that song in, which one was it? I know the name of the movie and you all know it. Climb Every Mountain.
Sound of Music.
Huh?
Sound of Music.
Sound of Music. And I think, thought of people climbing. Huff, huff. Okay, that's 7 mountains. 8 more to go. What do you get when you get to the top of a mountain? All you see is the same range of mountains. What is the use of becoming successful in something that once you get there is not going to give you what you want? In this world, there is nothing that you can look for that will give you what you really want. Many people think, well, when I have money, I'll be happy. It doesn't work that way. The truth is that many people who have money are among the most miserable. Howard Hughes was supposed to be the most wealthy man in the world. And a newspaper reporter was able to reach him a week before he died. And he said, "Have you found happiness?" Howard Hughes said, "Nah, I can't say I'm happy." His tone of voice said it for him. You aren't happy with money. Actually, what happens is, as long as you're looking for money, you think, well, when I get it, then I can get this and this and this and this, satisfy so many desires, which is why the desire for money is one of the great delusions. But once you've got it, you still are subject to all the problems of the body. You can wake up just as often with a stomach ache, with lots of money in the bank, as with no money in the bank, and quite possibly more, because it may make you eat wrongly. Money doesn't give it to you. Human love doesn't give it to you. That is the greatest delusion of all. Everybody wants a mate, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing in itself, but it's such a compromise with the heart, with what the heart really wants. We're looking for perfection of love, and we don't find it in another person. In fact, you don't find anything in anything unless you have it in yourself. To the extent that you can give love, you find love. To the extent that you can find joy in yourself, you can enjoy everything. When you have bliss in your heart, you can go through the countryside and see that everything is blissful. But if you're unhappy in yourself, no matter where you go, everything will disappoint you. It all begins with you. The success that you're looking for does not depend on anything outside, not on a good bank account, not on a beautiful home, not on a lovely marriage. It depends on your inner self. When you have reached that point, and that's why I say that the important thing is the attitude. When your attitude is right, then you find that you can take everything and enjoy it all. And like that Swami who was beaten with bricks and stones and came back laughing. You can laugh if you can expand your consciousness from identity with the body. This is why Jesus Christ said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. When you give, you feel more bliss. You're expanding your ego. The entire problem with life is this identity with ego. You find that people, you know, we've started communities. We have about 1,000 people living in these communities in different parts of the world. And one thing you learn when you live with a group of people over many years and see them evolving over all these years, you find that those who learn to give of themselves to others and share with others are always happy. Those who think first, I've got to get it together for myself and then I'll be able to help other people, they're never happy. And you find this working so often that you begin to realize there is a principle involved. The more you can learn to share whatever you get in life with others, the more you will find the kind of success you're really looking for. You're not looking for success as a thing. You only think you are. The success you're looking for is happiness. Howard Hughes was a failure because he hadn't found that happiness. And I've met very poor people who had found happiness. It doesn't depend on the money you have. It depends on your inner self. I remember a group of gypsies in Bucharest, and they came to us, and they have this chant in Romania, "Nu am mâncat pentru trei zile," I haven't eaten for 3 days. And so we gave them some money, and we went into a skating rink. And we came out of the skating rink about an hour or two later, and we saw these same gypsy children playing in the street, and they were laughing and having a good time. When they saw us, they said, "Ah, nu am mâncat pentru trei zile." But the fact is, they weren't that miserable. When you have what you're looking for inside, you have it everywhere. And then you find that somehow complete strangers become your friends. You find that life somehow supports you. You can make this kind of success. You don't have to wait for it to come to you. So much of it depends upon your own courage, your own equanimity, your own refusal to be upset by things when they don't go well. Just figure, what have I got to learn from this? You know, when you go to a movie and you see people killed and you see a great tragedy, maybe Hamlet or Macbeth, the best known ones, afterwards you say, that was a great story. I learned a lot from it. Why can't you do that with your own life? Say, okay, things aren't going so well as I would like, but I'm learning from it. You can learn from everything. And every time you learn something, this is something very important to understand, it's as if a certain weight was lifted off you. I've been on this path now for 60 years, and I've seen it work, that when I do the right things and overcome something in myself or in my karma or whatever it is, it's as if an actual load had been taken off my shoulders. You will find that your life is entirely self-made. And if you find happiness in life, it's because you make that happiness for yourself. The kind of success I'm talking about is that. However, we do have to overcome certain things in our lives. We do have to find success. It's not much fun to be poor. Not much fun to find that things don't go the way you would like them to. It's important to be able to mold your life outwardly too. And this is one of the keys that I want to talk about this evening. Energy is the primary cause of success. When you can put energy into what you're doing, I remember there was a group of people who were starting a company, and they kept talking about all the millions that they would make. But they weren't doing the things necessary to get those millions. If you put the energy out, the results will take care of themselves. In the Indian scripture, the Bhagavad Gita, it says, "Nishkam karma," action without desire for the fruits of action. This is the way. How do you do it? How do you manage to convey these abstract thoughts? I'm amazed. If you can really understand that the energy you put out determines how much you get back, you can be the president of your company if you learn that it doesn't come from toadying, from pleasing, but from doing a good job. So many people look for shortcuts. They try to curry favor. They try to buy their way in. I have never taken a bribe in my life, and I've had plenty of temptations to do so. I've never bribed anyone in my life, and I've had plenty of temptations to do so. It means absolutely nothing. Honestly, I say this with my complete sincerity. I would rather that Ananda fail than that it succeed in the wrong way. There are two rules at Ananda, and I would like to propose them to you too. The first is people are more important than things. People are more important than projects. When you have, when you're trying to scramble up the ladder of success, let's say, if you can say that I don't care for success nearly so much as I care for other people and for their happiness, this is right use of moral principle. I wrote a book, and it's a very interesting book, and I naturally I like it, but I it is called Hope for a Better World. And in this I analyze some, I take on some of the big guns of Western civilization, and I take on Adam Smith. And he scandalized the people of his day by saying that everybody is really looking for himself and working for himself. And instead of resisting that and saying it's immoral, I look at it with an impartial eye and I say, of course it's true. Naturally you're going to work for yourself. Whom else are you going to work for? The question is how you work. So I postulated two kinds of baker. One of them was called William Baker. The other one was called Joe Crumpet. And William Baker thought in terms of how much he would make out of his customers. And when they came in the door, he only thought about what he'd get from them. And he took his money and let them go and didn't pay any attention to them. Joe Crumpet, on the other hand, greeted them all as friends, not just customers, friends. And when they came in, he would ask them how they were and how their family was. He would take an interest in their lives. He would ask them, what kind of bread would you like me to make? Is there something that I'm not making that you would enjoy? To whom would people go? Both of these men are thinking of their own success. But to whom would you go to? Obviously, the one who's interested in you too. I was in Taormina in Sicily a few years ago, and I went into a shop where I wanted to buy a hat because the sun was strong. And the woman there, I asked her, which hat do your customers like best? Because I really don't wear hats and don't know much about it. She said, I don't care. Just they pay me and they leave. What more do they interest me than that? I said, here you are wasting 8 hours a day just thinking in terms of how many shekels you're going to get. And you're not thinking in terms of these people as an opportunity to make friends. You're not finding happiness in your work because you're not thinking of anything that will make other people happy. What is the use of living like that? You go home and watch TV and have nightmares? And I left, I didn't buy a hat. Well, the next year I was in that town and I happened to be walking past her shop. I wasn't going to go in, but she was outside. And you know, that woman came to me with tears in her eyes. She said, thank you. You've taught me a very good lesson. And when the hotel gave us a bottle of wine because we were repeat customers, so we don't drink alcohol. So I thought, well, let me give it to her. And she was drinking, weeping. And she kissed me on both cheeks before I could get my guard up. And it was so important to her to understand that simple principle. When you work, why not enjoy your work? Enjoy your customers. Enjoy the people you're working with. You can do it. Don't think just in terms of what you're going to get out of it. Think in terms of what you can give. The energy you put into it will be comparable to the energy you get back from it. Energy is very important. Another very important thing for success is concentration. People who work with half their mind and half their mind somewhere else, they can't succeed. Whatever you do, do it with keen interest. Everything can be interesting if you really put yourself into it. But without concentration, you can't. This is why meditation is so important. I have found that by meditation, time itself doesn't seem to matter anymore. I can do in a very quick time something that normally would take a long time. I remember Padma, she's probably here tonight, she was in charge of our publications years ago. And we were having our 20th anniversary. This year is our 40th anniversary. So 1988. And she was saying that it would be such a nice thing to put out a book for this occasion. I said, yes, but I only have a week, and then I've got commitments. I can't put more time into it than that. And it was not possible. She said, well, it would be nice. She's very persistent. And I said, yeah, it would be, but. And then I thought about it, and I said, yes, it would be. And I can't do it, possibly, but God can do anything through me. And so I put aside the thought of a week. I just said, this is a job that needs to be done and done in a hurry. And the second day of my writing this thing, the electricity went out. Somebody was in the room and turned off the fuse by mistake, and I lost all my work. I was so discouraged. I didn't do any more work that day. Didn't have the willpower to do work the next day. So essentially in 4 days, I wrote that book, and it's a very good book, and I recommend it. What a salesman, I'm sorry. It's called Cities of Light. But it was amazing how quickly that book came to me. It just flowed. There was almost no editing that I needed to do. You can do everything. You can rise above time and space if you put yourself in a sufficiently concentrated state. And there's something else to concentration, more than just focusing your mind. There is a superconscious level that you can touch. And when you can reach that level, really God can do anything through you. I have to say that's the secret of my whatever limited success I've had in my life. The plain truth that I simply can't do anything well, and so why worry about it? He can do anything and everything. If you feel yourself to be open to receiving inspiration, we are like little points of light with the sunlight shining down upon us. It's amazing how much you can draw from your own inner self. You don't have to be there pleading to God, please give me favor, do me the favor of making this work and so on. Don't worry about it. Just demand that he give you what you want and he'll do it. That divine law doesn't work by humbly begging and pleading. In that song that we sing, Door of My Heart, Open Wide I Keep for Thee, there was one stanza in the original Bengali, Ami Bikiri, I'm a beggar. Yogananda refused to translate that. He said, don't be a beggar before God. Say that you have a right to everything in the universe. You are his child. And I have found that when I pray to God that way, I don't say, please give me a melody. I say, give me a melody. And I don't put it challengingly. I'm respectful, naturally. But I do say I have a right to this knowledge. And it's amazing how when you demand in that way with... That's what Jesus said, pray believing. When you pray believing, when you pray with complete faith that it will come to you, it's yours by right, it's there already, you'll be amazed to see how many things come to you. I've written 400 pieces of music. I haven't written any music. It has been given to me. But it was given to me not because I said, Lord, here I am, give me what you want. I said, I want to say something in music that expresses this thought or that thought, and give it to me. Or sometimes people ask me questions or whatever it might be, and I say, well, the answer is there, and it's got to come to me, and let me have it. And like that, I many times in a talk, I'll say, now here's a very important point. And I won't even know what that important point is. It's never let me down. Always I find that suddenly there it is. The understanding is there. You don't have to pray blankly for months. You can get it this moment if you put out that kind of energy, if you put it into the superconscious and just say, God, I'm your child, give it to me. And I have seen that impossible things do happen. It took quite a few miracles to make Ananda happen. I didn't have any money. How was I going to start a community? People told me I was a fool. But I was able to do it because I had that much faith. Somehow, when the need came, the answer was there. For every problem, the American Indians say that for every poisonous weed or plant, There is an antidote live right in that same area. And this is the next thing that you need to learn to do if you want to be successful. Be solution conscious. Don't be problem conscious. When I find people in the community who are problem conscious, I keep them at a distance. Don't mix with failures. Mix with people who succeed in their efforts. I don't mean don't be friendly to everybody, but the failures can pull you down with their failure consciousness. There is such a thing as expecting success and expecting failure. And if you expect success, if you have solution consciousness, you'll be amazed to see how often the answers come to you, even out of the blue. Somebody can come and give it to you without your even knowing that he knows anything. Those answers are in the ether. You are living in a great sea of wisdom. And the only reason you don't touch that is because your mind isn't on that. When you're solution conscious, you put out the kind of magnetism that attracts the kind of success you want. And there is some sort of a higher force working in our lives, to the extent that we allow it to. You know, when I found Autobiography of a Yogi, I was looking very hard for God. I didn't know what God was. I didn't know how to find him. But I knew I needed something. And I had read a little bit because my mother had a book in her library, A Short World Bible. And in that it gave different excerpts from different religions. And I was very impressed with the Indian one because it spoke of truth as being, and of spirit as being infinite, not just confined to one person. And it said more than that, if you want to know truth, you must experience it. It's not enough to believe it. And with this thought, I decided I wanted to experience truth. And it said that you should go to a solitary place and meditate on me. I didn't know what meditation was, but I was jolly well going to try. Well, thank God I was spared that problem. God does take an interest in our lives if we ask him to, if we allow him to. My father at that time was sent to Egypt with his company. He was an oil geologist for Esso, and he was sent to explore for oil in Egypt. And my mother, I was packing her up to put her on the ship. The very day I put her on the ship to go join my dad, I went uptown New York and went into a bookstore and found Autobiography of a Yogi. If she had been there, if my dad had been there, it would have been difficult to make that break because I didn't really know what I was doing except that I did know. But it would have been so shocking and so... They were completely shocked. I know that just not long before this all happened, an aunt of mine was visiting us in Scarsdale or White Plains. And she said, I think Don will end up in a seminary. And my mother said, oh, not Don. As if anybody, but not he. Because I was not interested in church the way she believed in it. But when that obstacle is removed of my parental consent or dissent, I found that book, and it was such an absolute mind-blower for me. I took the next bus across the country. And that's another thing that I think is necessary for success. When you find something that you want, go for it now. Don't say, well, someday. I've seen a lot of Indians saying, well, when I'm old and tired and have nothing better to do, is probably what they imply, although they don't say it, then I'll seek God. Seek him now. Somebody said to me yesterday, well, how can I meditate? I don't have time. I said, look, you probably spend about 5 minutes a day brushing your teeth. What about spiritual hygiene? Why not just put aside a little bit of time to meditate? You don't have to make a big thing of it. The thought that someday when I'm old and retired and, again, have nothing better to do, I'll go to the Himalayas, and it never will happen. By that time, you'll be so bound by habits that you won't think of it. You'll think of your grandchildren, then your great-grandchildren, and then if you can hang around long enough, your great-great-grandchildren. It won't happen. When you see something that you want, then go for it now. Don't waste time. The world will always find ways of clutching you and holding you down. It has a million ways of involving you, and if you want to think about it realistically, I don't know if you believe in reincarnation. I absolutely do. But let's just assume that it's a truth, even if you don't believe in it. Think how long it would take. And you know, when I see a group of people, I see people on many different levels of evolution. These are not genes. These are the experiences that you've had in the past that have made you predisposed to one thing or another. For example, I never have been attracted to gambling. No doubt in some past life, I tried it and I suffered from it, because now I simply am not interested. The irony of it being that the first money I earned in my life, I earned through gambling. My parents, when I was 6 or 8 months old, invested in a lottery ticket for me, and I won $500. Apart from that shame, I have to say there's something about it. I don't know how many of you know how to play bridge, but I was with my parents some many years ago when they were living, and they wanted to play bridge with some friends for a penny a point. And I thought, well, I want to be a good son, and therefore I don't want to spoil their pleasure. But I don't want to gamble. I don't want to win. I don't want to lose. I want. So please, God, I said, I call God my Divine Mother. I said, please, Divine Mother, help me out of this predicament. You know, my score at the end of the evening was just what I wanted, 0. Impossible. The odds against that are, I would think, probably astronomical. But I didn't want to win, I didn't want to lose. So she helps you out. You'll find that God really does listen to you if you give him a chance. Just say, well, God, I live in an experimental age. We test everything to find out if it works. Why not try prayer and see if that works too? But pray in the right spirit. Pray as if he were your confidant. Pray as if he were your friend. Pray to him and say, I just want to do what is right. You tell me what is right. You will find in amazing ways that you will be helped. I remember, just to give you another little example out of many that I could tell you, I was inspired in 1972 to go to India. I felt that Divine Mother wanted me to go to India after many years that I hadn't been there. And I had enough money saved up from classes that I'd given and money that people had given me. And so I was all set to go. But 2 weeks before I was to leave, I was in San Francisco and my car threw a rod. And I realized that it was time to get rid of that old clunker. And the issue before me that I faced was, shall I buy a new car with the money that I have and then not go to India? Or shall I go to India and come back and not have a car when I live up in there in the mountains where a car is actually a necessity? And so I didn't get any answer from God. So I put it to him very frankly, and just like this. I said, Divine Mother, my common sense tells me I need a car. If you do want me to go to India, you're going to have to reimburse me. It's not a question of going on your knees and God, please. No, just if you really do want me to go, reimburse me. So I bought a car. It was a used car, but I spent $1,100 on it. And with the money I got from my other car, my clunker, I was able to get a decent used car. This was Friday night. The next Monday morning, I got a check in the mail from somebody I did not know. And it was addressed, had a check in it for addressed to me personally. It said, please use this as Divine Mother wants you to. How many people in this country think of God as Divine Mother? And it was a check for $1,000. So I got to go to India. But I've seen this happen so many times. There was one time on that same trip in India, I wanted to go to Calcutta. I did go to Calcutta, but there was a friend of mine who had been a professor and student at UC Davis. And I was sorry, going to Calcutta, he lived in Bhubaneswar, in south of Calcutta, about 300 miles, 200 miles. And I was sorry, going to Calcutta, that I didn't know his address, because I would have liked to see him again. Just a simple thing. But I had placed the whole trip in God's hands, and I said, "You decide, God. But I would like to see him if it's possible." I arrived in Calcutta, and the people who were supposed to meet me at the airport were late because of traffic. And so there was nobody to meet me. Well, what do you do when you go to an airport and there's nobody there to meet you? You rush to the nearest phone, what's it? You get all excited. But I had placed this whole trip in Divine Mother's hands, and I said, "Divine Mother, what do you have in mind?" At that moment, somebody stopped in front of me and said, "What is your name?" And I told him. He said, "Oh, I thought it must be you. A friend of mine, a Dr. Mishra, showed me your photograph, and I've been longing to meet you." And I said, "This Dr. Mishra was the man I wanted to see." I said, "Well, I want to see him. And can you give me his address?" He said, "No need. I've come to Calcutta just to see him. I'll take you there." And these friends of mine, if they had come, I wouldn't have had that chance. If I'd rushed to the telephone, he wouldn't have stopped to see me. If you place things in God's hands, it's absolutely amazing how things do work. How come you are conscious? It's not your brain that made you conscious. Consciousness is a fact of the universe, and the brain is able to express some of that consciousness. It doesn't create it. Some people think that someday machines will become sophisticated enough to be able to be conscious. Well, think of an earthworm. Nothing could be simpler than an earthworm. But it's obviously conscious. It doesn't have a complicated electronic mechanism. But if you press it with a pin, it will squirm away. It's not only conscious, it's self-conscious. Self-consciousness. You can never analyze consciousness. Descartes made a mistake in identifying it with thinking, because you are conscious and therefore you can think. It isn't that you can think and therefore you are. Quite wrong. You are conscious. Everything is conscious. The merest rocks are conscious, because God could not create the universe except out of his own consciousness. He wasn't like a carpenter who can go out and buy wood and a hammer and nails. There was nothing. The earth was without form and void, as the Bible tells us. And out of that infinite consciousness, he manifested this whole universe. He manifested it first in idea, then in energy, then in matter. But in this day and age, we've come to a marvelous point in our history, because it's possible. Science has proved that everything is really only a vibration of energy, that reality is not solid. It is energy in those little vibrating atoms. And your own body, which seems so solid, is not. If you were to take the space out from the particles in your body would be reduced to the size of a speck of dust, if you could see it at all. It would be just as heavy, but it would not have any massive dimension. And even that little speck of dust would really be energy. We're living in an absolutely fantastic time now, because science has shown us a universe so different from what people used to think. People still think of God as something like that old man on the ceiling at the Sistine Chapel, creating Adam. It's an interesting picture, by the way, because if you look at it closely, you will see that Adam's ankle, Adam's calf and shin bone looks just like a woman with her breasts here. Look at it sometime. You'll find it quite interesting to see how he was able to give that form, so that Adam was brought out, not of his rib in this case, but at least out of Adam. Of course, I often suspect that thing of not being true, because why do men have breasts? Seems like the breast would be pointless if it weren't for women having breasts. Therefore, one thinks maybe women were the first ones. I don't know. The point is that this world is very different from what it seemed to be. No old man with a long beard could have created this universe. It was his consciousness. And this is a very important point to remember when you think in terms of success. How did that infinite, how was it able to create or manifest the vibrations that brought this universe into manifestation? By duality. The ocean, which was calm, when the wind went over the waters, as is described in Genesis, the waves began to appear. And that is the nature of this universe. It's based on vibration. Where there is vibration of an up movement, there will have to be a compensating depression. And so the more you get into outward expression, the more you will have to deal with the duality of it. When you see people on television advertising some product and getting all excited and jumping up and down, the very act of jumping up and down means you've got to come down to earth again. You cannot get excited and think of success in terms of wow, because you're going to have to suffer a depression. And this is the nature of the world, and it's something else that's very important to know if you're looking for success, that every failure, every success will be balanced by a failure. Every victory will be balanced by a defeat. Every joy will be balanced by a suffering, as long as it's outward. Everything outward has its opposite. And if you look back over your lives, you've lived long enough to see these things to be true. That you have your good days and your bad days. And those people who live only for outward excitement and thrills and success, they know a lot of failure. You must learn to become even-minded and take everything that comes and not be affected by it. The more you can remain even-minded and cheerful all the time, the more you'll find that you can level out those things and achieve the kind of success that is worthwhile. You know, when William the Conqueror landed on the soil of England, the first thing he did was fall in the sand, and there was this gasp of horror that went over the whole army, thinking, oh, what a bad omen. Here we've come to a country to conquer it, and the first thing our leader does is fall down flat on his hands and knees. William was a man of extraordinary courage. He said, I am so determined to grasp this country that I have taken it in both my hands. And everybody cheered. Everything that comes to you, if you take it with that attitude, you can find that the worst failure can bring you success. I've had many failures in my life. I'm grateful for them, because they've helped me to rise above those things and find the success I want. You can make your success. You don't have to wait for anybody to hand it to you. Understand that it depends on your power inside. Now, how do you get inside? The more you can live in your spine, the more you can feel centered in your spine, the less anything will affect you. This is where Kriya Yoga becomes a very important science. It's not a question of belief. It's not a question of mere devotion. It's a question of science, too. The more you are centered in yourself, the more you find, you know, I'm going to give you a little touch of this, a little understanding of this, that there, the cause of the physical breath is movement of energy in the spine. The energy going up the left side of the spine is called the ida. The nerve center, nerve going down the spine is called the pingala. Every time you inhale, it's because energy is going up in the ida, and every time you exhale, it's because of energy going down in the pingala. And every time you feel success about anything, you sort of inhale, don't you? And when you feel badly about something, you exhale. The way you sit, your posture, the way you hold your head, everything tells you that your reality begins inside. If you can get control over that current in your spine, you can bring it into the deep spine and raise your energy completely toward God without an opposite. If you can find joy in yourself, it won't have an opposite. Many people think that if I'm going to be even-minded, how can I be cheerful? I'll be apathetic. That's not the truth. When you have your mind settled inside, you find you're always happy. Because joy is something you have inside. You are joy. It is not something you achieve by getting anything. The more you can learn to strip away this thought that I need this and I need that, the more you can say, I have everything that I'm looking for. There's a story in the Indian scriptures of a musk deer, which at a certain season every year secretes the odor of musk in its navel. And it goes mad looking for the source of this wonderful smell, and sometimes it leaps off a high crag to its death. And the hunter comes and takes away this pouch of very precious musk and sells it for expensive perfume. Well, if you could understand that you were a musk deer, running madly for the perfume you thought you secrete in your own self, and you don't know where it's coming from, and you think that you're going to find it in this way and that way, when all the time you are that. You are the joy you're looking for, and you are the success you're looking for. There was one yogi that Alexander, when he conquered many countries, when he came to India, and he found this yogi who didn't own anything. He lived under a tree and spent his time meditating. And he sent word to this yogi by messengers that our king would like you to come to his palace or his camp or wherever he was at the time. And if he does, he'll shower you with riches. But if you don't, he'll take your head off. And the yogi sent back the message that the riches that he promises me are absolutely worthless to me. I don't need them. And if he wants my head, he's welcome to it. I don't need it either. I have found what my life was designed to give me. So finally, Alexander had to come and prostrate before him. The real kings in this world are not those on thrones with crowns. They are the people who are king of themselves. This is why saints in India are often addressed as Maharaja, great king. When you can be king over yourself, then you can attract success and anything that you're looking for in this world, whatever it may be. I have done a few little things in my life, but I've done them partly just to help set that example. You may be a cook. You may be a CEO in a business. You may be a bank teller. Whatever you do, you can be a great success at it if you do it with full concentration and energy. When you seek success, seek it first of all in yourself. When you seek success, again, there are many little tricks to finding success. Have a clear image in your mind of what you want. So many people want success. What's success? You need to define in your mind what you're looking for. If you set out to achieve a particular goal, then make that goal very clear in your mind. This is how melodies have come to me. I've had a very clear image of what I wanted the melody to say. Then I said, God, give me a melody that says that, and it comes to me. Another very important point to remember is that your success will not be somebody else's success. You are unique in the whole universe. God, as Yogananda said, every atom is dowered with individuality. God made you from inside out, not from outside in like a sculptor. He became you. And he is your unique in yourself. It will always be, there's that song they used to sing, there will never be, never ever be another you. This sounds like a romantic sort of sentiment. It is the truth. There can never be another you. You are yourself for all eternity. Whatever you achieve will be your particular kind of success. So don't look for other people's definitions of success either. Feel in your mind what it is that you want. With God's grace, I knew from the beginning what I wanted to do in this life. And I was able to do it. At 15, I decided I wanted to start communities, and I've been able to do it. With God's help, absolutely. You can't do anything without His help. That's something I want you to understand, that God is a conscious force, and He's conscious in you and through you. You don't have to look out there. He's not up in the heavens. He's right here. He's a part of your own thinking. But the more you open yourself to Him, the more you will find that opportunities, inspiration, understanding, wisdom, whatever you need will be given to you. And whenever you turn away from it in a little bit, you find then it isn't yours anymore. You have to keep yourself in readiness. You have to hold your consciousness up to Him. And if you can do that, you'll see that these things work. I'd like to ask you, do you have any questions? Because this is this subject has many ramifications, and maybe you have some thought that I haven't had that would be worth addressing. Yes.
What exactly is the superconsciousness?
Superconsciousness is, actually, you know, we have our conscious and subconscious. The conscious is that which deals through the senses. The subconscious is sort of our dream world, and it's that part of our mind to which we relegate memories and impulses and things that we don't live deliberately. But the superconscious is a level of your own awareness which is potentially there all the time. You are that self, and these other things are filters through which that consciousness operates. So superconsciousness means, well, it comes to everybody at certain times when you're more aware than ever, when you suddenly feel, yes, I do know. But it's a higher state of consciousness. The best way to reach that consciousness is to put your mind here. You know, the human brain is the only animal brain that has a frontal lobe. Other dogs, you look at them, their foreheads go backward. Human beings have this frontal lobe. In the brain, that is where it is located. When you feel inspiration, you'll feel it all up here. Feel yourself centered here. There are two things I'm talking about, the yoga science now, and there's an awful lot in the yoga science that it's absolutely fascinating, but of course I'm not giving a lecture on yoga today. But the ego is centered in the medulla oblongata, just as your feelings are centered in the heart. This is why women's breasts are here and not down here, as they are in animals, because they have more feeling, more conscious feeling. The heart area, when you have some swain who feels brokenhearted, he never says broken need. It's his heart that's broken, not his knee. That is to say, your feeling, your intense feeling, always is centered here. And there are other centers in the spine that relate to certain stages of human consciousness. The ego is centered here in the medulla. And that's why people speak of looking down their noses at other people. Because the energy back here draws your head back. It's automatic. You don't have to be a religious follower of any kind. And why is the universal gesture for humility a bow? It signifies releasing this tension and offering it. The opposite center, the opposite pole of the same center, is between the eyebrows. It's not really so much here in the forehead, which is just a hunk of bone, but in the frontal lobe of the brain at this point, there is superconsciousness. When you have that awareness, you know that your consciousness has been raised. In that state, you see an inner light, and that light is, as Jesus said, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be filled with light. Many translators, not knowing that meaning, have translated if you have a pure heart, pure if your eye is healthy. But that's not the meaning. If your two eyes, which represent duality, become one in this light here in the forehead, then you see this spiritual eye through which wisdom comes and superconsciousness. So concentration, willpower, superconsciousness, all are centered here. That's why when you really will something, you find yourself knitting your eyebrows, or when you're really concentrating. Can you tell me that again? You knit your eyebrows. It's an automatic thing. It's not a matter of belief. You can be totally unbelieving of these things and still it'll be true for you. So the goal in spiritual effort is to relax this energy here and bring it up here, and that's where yoga practice is so helpful. When you can bring it here, you suddenly can understand things. You know, it's a very interesting fact, but back in the 18th century, when composers and artists and so on were considered more or less underlings of bishops and dukes and whatever else, they weren't considered very important in the general scheme of things. You find great music. But as soon as the Industrial Revolution brought people to the point of thinking materialistically, artistic people began to think, well, but I'm a precious person. I like beauty. I like sensitivity. And they began to develop a certain artistic ego. And you find that many artists in the 19th century, because of that artistic ego that made them feel themselves to be special, actually lost their mental balance. That's why they say that there's such a fine line between insanity and genius. Because the more energy you bring to the brain, if it's blocked in the medulla instead of allowed to flow forward, if you become egotistical, sure, I can do that kind of thing, you'll notice people who are egotistical, they not only look down their nose, they even shake their heads back and forth. When you have that kind of attitude, then if the more energy you bring to the brain, the greater the likelihood is there is of an imbalance. You need to learn how to relax this energy from back here and bring it here. And ego, as my guru used to say, is the death of wisdom. You need a certain amount of ego to do well what you have to do. But beyond that point, you need to be able to surrender that ego and allow a higher wisdom and a higher power to work through you. Now, this is quite the opposite of what a lot of people teach. They teach to affirm success, affirm that you're good, affirm that up to a certain point you have to do that. Inferiority complex is just as bad as superiority complex. But you've got to overcome all complexes. And then you find that there is this flow that allows things to happen and in a natural way. So the superconscious, to repeat, that is your true self and the other is a filter. Do you understand a little of that? Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Could you spoke about keeping people with a failure mindset at a distance. Can you talk about how you do that in a loving way?
You spoke of...
I'm deaf. That's the worst part of my asking for questions.
You spoke of keeping people with failure consciousness at a distance. Can you speak about how you can do that in a loving way?
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. There are some people you keep at a distance naturally. You can't just exclude them and refuse to speak with them, but try to arrange that your closest friends are people with success consciousness. If you want to be an artist, mix with successful artists, don't mix with failures. If you want to be a success in business, mix with successful businessmen. This is another aspect of success which I haven't touched on tonight, but very important. Success depends on the magnetism you put out. We attract success according to that magnetism, and the magnetism depends on the flow of energy and the strength of that flow. And so if you are with people who sap that because they don't have it, you'll find it's much harder to overcome it. So you don't want to be so uncharitable as to refuse to mix with people who are failures, but try to mix more with people who are successful in whatever field you want to achieve. Your company, the company you keep, is a very important part of whatever success you achieve in life. Okay? Yes.
Westerners, and we're on
a path here. I've been on a path a lot of my life, and I'm so grateful to all the work you and Yogananda have done and this lineage. But I can be very complete within myself and internally and feel satisfied in my own path, but that interface, wanting to make a difference in the world, and whatever success means in a worldly way, my landlord needs to be paid whether I care or not, or I feel peaceful.
It's very important to understand, if you have a desire, then it's far better to go ahead and fulfill it. And how are you going to fulfill it if you fail? So you've got to be successful at whatever you really want to do in life. Don't feel that success is failure. You have to succeed. And that means everything that I've said this evening about putting your energy out and putting concentration out and putting willpower and affirming success and affirming solution consciousness and all the things that I've said, ultimately we must understand that success will not be that. But until we've achieved that, we won't know. It's only after you've reached the top of a hill that you see that it didn't really get you very far. You still have to come down again. So understand that I'm not talking about not succeeding in a worldly way. What I'm doing, and I think I've achieved it in my life, I've done many things that have been successful in a worldly way. And yet I've always known that it wasn't what I was really looking for. And that, too, is important. So if you're looking for a successful career in money, then put your mind into it. People who succeed in worldly ways have to have money consciousness. You have to understand that this is something I've determined to achieve, and you have to fulfill certain desires because you won't get rid of them until you have fulfilled them. So with that understanding, knowing that it's not the final goal would be helpful, because then you won't be disappointed when you find it and you don't have what you want. But do work for whatever you have. The main thing is to share what you get with others. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, what if we really know that we don't care about those worldly things?
Yeah, you won't know until you have achieved it, and then you've realized, well, it's not that, it's not anything after all. But you won't know as long as you're struggling up the mountain top, the mountainside. The only thought you have is to reach the top. So you have to go ahead and finish that. You can't cut your desires short. You've got to work them out. So it helps to know that while you're climbing that mountain, it's not an end in itself. Nonetheless, you've set yourself to do it. Anything you set yourself to do, accomplish. That's why at the end of my life, and 82 is not necessarily the end, but it's getting closer, you might say, than when I was 28. I can say now that everything that I've done doesn't mean anything to me, except that I'm grateful that it's been good. I'm grateful for the songs I've written. I'm grateful for the books I've written, but they aren't mine. It's just something that happened. The one thing that is really worth it to me is sharing what I know with other people and helping other people to find happiness in themselves. And I've always had these twofold desires in my life, really. One was to find God, and the other was to share Him with others. Have I found Him? No, but I found a good share of it. I found enough to know that it works. And I am still working on it myself, but I'm happy to share with everybody what little I know. So when you're looking for success, that's why I say, the more you narrow that peak, the more limited it will be. But if every success you're looking for, you try to bring other people into it, try to share it with other people, then you will find a much greater fulfillment than if you... Well, I saw a cartoon in which this man was standing there looking like an emperor over his factory with all these... funnels, belching steam and so on. He was looking like this. His wife came in with rags with the little son. She said, "Dear, can't we think also of our family? Do we have to think only in terms of success? Of course there should be other things. We should not be unbalanced. Share with other people." Does that answer your question?
I'm sorry, it doesn't.
Try again.
A long long time. There's a generation of people who've done that. And we haven't cared about the material realm. Now what? That's what I'm asking you.
Well, you don't have, you know, Jesus said that God comes like a thief in the night. You don't suddenly arrive on a threshold and there he is. It's more that the more you practice, the more joy you feel in yourself. That's its own goal. It's worth it for itself. When you meditate, it's not like crossing a desert and finally expecting to find an oasis if you're lucky. The land gets more and more beautiful. If you have been meditating regularly for years, then you should have the answer in yourself to that question. Does that help you? Because I'm telling you, you have to have that answer yourself.
I'm just looking at the resolution between the desire for spirit and the demands of the material world that we're in right now.
Well, you have to meet those demands properly. I don't think that anybody who can't make it in the world is going to find God. People who have that capacity to find God have the capacity to succeed outwardly too. So if you're not finding that, there's something wrong with your seeking. Both are, in their own way, real. This is much more real, in fact, it's the only reality. But as long as you're living in this limited reality, you have to deal with that too, and competently. If I can't answer it, if that doesn't answer it, I've given you all I can. Any other questions? Yes.
Could you talk a little bit more about the breathing, bringing your energy up to a blissful place?
This is the technique of Kriya Yoga particularly. And I can't give it like this because it's initiation that you take to get it. But the thing is that you understand the source of your physical breath to be the energy in the spine. And you concentrate on that energy in the spine, and it brings your energy deeper from the reactive emotional nature of human beings to this inner self that is always in control of itself. And once you become centered in that, then you begin to rise spiritually, inwardly. It's a deep thing, and I could give a class on the subject, but not this moment. Well, I guess that's enough time for a lecture. Thank you all. I've enjoyed it. Let's have the...